Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to episode 65 of Absolutely Intercultural. In today's show, we put our emphasis on working cultures, both in digital work contexts as well as in face-to-face teamwork. Now, whether you prefer to work in a hierarchical context or whether your nature tells you you should work collaboratively, we sometimes end up in workplaces which do not leave that choice to us. As a consequence, a large part of our success in the workplace depends on how easily we can identify existing working cultures and how flexible we are in getting used to new environments and to a new culture. Some of our colleagues may always be pointing out that in their last workplace things were done differently, while others, like chameleons, seem to switch between different working cultures without any problems of adaptation. Are you aware of the working culture that surrounds you? Do you appreciate it? Or would you like to change it if you could? Do you notice that you have an impact on this culture too? Now let us keep in mind that here we do not use the word culture in the sense of national culture, as in Korean or French culture, but in the sense of norms of behavior and the way work is organized, which is often specific to one workplace. At first, we looked at email behavior because the norms vary a lot between different types of institutions, and different styles and cultures of writing can create real problems and misunderstandings.
Yes, I'm afraid email is a communication just like any other one, maybe even a little more dangerous than other channels of communication.
Then we will hear about face-to-face intercultural excursions with quite some conflict potential.
Obviously, there are situations where students don't get on. Germans tend to be very competitive, very ambitious. Finns tend to like staying out late at night and opening bottles of vodka in the middle of the night.
And finally, our interviewees will tell us about their plans for internationalization.
In the first 2 weeks, I would like to observe the classes of certain professors in banking and finance.
We're keen for our students to experience international cultures and so on, because particularly coming from northeast of Scotland, we have quite a high proportion of local students.
Now let us start with the show. In our first category, Absolutely Structured, we talk about different email cultures and discover that, yes, your email may show your personal writing style, but that your email also says a lot about the working culture of your company or your institution. We notice that people who work together closely seem to adopt each other's writing culture when it comes to using signatures or salutation lines. In some institutions, we will send messages ending in greetings from Helsinki, where we've just had the first snow, while in others, the last lines are more likely to be carbon copy to Mrs. X, Mrs. Y, and Mr. Z. I notice that I personally look out for signals that indicate whether the message is well structured and can easily be read and dealt with even when time is short. So in between two lectures, when I do not have a lot of time, I certainly give preference to those messages which have a well-written subject line. This does not mean that the message has to be very formal, but that the writer should show consideration for the reader and should make it as easy as possible to open, to understand, to answer, and possibly even to find this message amongst thousands of other messages months later. Maria tried to find out what cultural experiences Andreas Vollstich and Sabine Rau, both colleagues of mine, have made with incoming email messages. And she also interviewed me to find out whether conflicts can be enhanced by certain email styles. But first, she asked Andreas how he reacts to email messages in which the subject line has been left blank.
About 10% of the messages I receive don't have a subject line. And first of all, it makes me furious. And secondly, in most of these cases, I have to write back with another question, because actually those people who don't include subject lines normally don't make very clear requests either. So sometimes they just ask me, how can I improve my English? And my question to them is then, what are you studying? What exactly are you planning to do? Why do you need to improve your English? And so on. So actually, it's a matter of structuring communication, really, if you don't meet the other person face to face.
So what do you prefer then, the more formal or more informal style?
Relaxed, but showing enough care for your reader. Actually, if I write a thoughtless and unstructured message to someone, this is really being a bit inconsiderate towards the other person. So actually, I like showing that you're on good terms with the other person by writing less formally, but I don't like sending out messages that make it very difficult for the other person to get at what I'm trying to say.
Do you ever have a conflict via email? So you respond to a person and you get in kind of a fight?
Oh, all the time, I'm afraid. Yes, I'm afraid email is a communication just like any other one, maybe even a little more dangerous than other channels of communication. And I find that I get as many conflicts as I would get in normal, real face-to-face communication, except that sometimes I get it because people phrase something in a way which they wouldn't do if I was looking at them and they were looking at me. So sometimes there are little misunderstandings that somebody tries to be, how can I say that, tries to be a little more formal, and then it comes across to me as unfriendly, actually.
So you say it's more likely to have it via email and not if you would be in person.
I would say so, because if you're there in person, people don't put on a mask so easily. So they don't try to write more formal. They don't try to speak more formal. And also you can see on their faces whether they're trying to be nasty to you or whether they just used the wrong word, for example. I think you're more likely to create a problem in email messages. I think this is actually the reason why these little emoticons were introduced, where you can show that you're being ironic, that you're making a joke, etc., etc.
So in the last couple of years, would you say your email culture has changed? Did you get more professional and you have your own system now, how you cope with your emails?
Yes, I changed it a lot because when I started with the university, I didn't have access to emails before. And here I really learned how to use them. And of course, it was that when I'm in my internships, I learned how to use them. In the beginning, I make them really friendly and very flourishing. And I try to make it really detailed. But now I'm trying to make them more concrete and that there are not too many words in it so that it's really fast checked by the other people.
Maybe this is the way forward, to be as concrete as possible and to make sure that even if the reader has limited time, they can check these messages and quickly find out what is important and what needs to be done. Maria went on to ask for very specific advice how to write an email message which is likely to catch the addressee's attention immediately. Andreas points out that sometimes it would be better to write three messages instead of cramming three different ideas into one. I report that I really appreciate a speaking subject line, and Sabine suggests to be upfront and explicit and mark the message as urgent and clearly write in no uncertain terms that a prompt reply is needed.
The first thing would be always include a subject line. The second rule would certainly be don't put too many different issues into one message. So one important point per message is totally enough. Otherwise, it's difficult to file the messages appropriately, and it will also be difficult to answer the messages. Often I find that I can answer points one and two spontaneously, but I would actually need more time for the third issue at hand, and then I decide to answer it later. The other person would be better off if these issues had been mentioned separately, because then I would have answered messages one and two straight away.
I think you would grab my attention even if I only have 5 minutes in between two lectures if you write a very speaking subject line. That means a subject line where, without opening the email message, without looking at the body of the message, I already get a clear idea what you want from me, whether my attention is needed immediately, and you give me enough information in the subject line. Actually, also, using my name in the subject line helps. So if you send me a message putting Laurent colon and then need language certificate for my application in Antwerp, I would open this immediately because I would have the impression, okay, this person is very organized, so I should be organized too.
In the reference, I write that this is urgent and I write that I really want to have an answer.
And that works.
Yeah, it always works.
Let us hope that the advice we have given for polishing your email culture always works for our listeners too. In fact, your success is almost guaranteed because I have a feeling that as soon as you begin to reflect more about the specific email culture that you and your correspondents work in, your messages will automatically be more adapted to that culture and maybe be more successful. My experience is that a well-written request that contains 5 specific questions has a good chance of triggering an answer which actually answers all 5 questions and not just 2 of them. The trick is to adapt your personal style to the working culture of your own institution and to that of your addressees. In our next category, Absolutely International, we also look at different working cultures, but this time not in email contact, but in face-to-face teamwork. The international experience we hear about starts with an intercultural test of what we expect of the working cultures of the other countries. Once a year, the University of Applied Sciences in Mönchengladbach, Germany, take their students out of the regular classroom and mix them with a variety of European students in order to train their intercultural teamwork abilities. I asked Jean Lennox to tell us about their international excursion with a university in Poznan, Poland.
We take a group of students over to Poland, to Poznan, and we meet at this very interesting university. It's the standards of the building is extremely interesting because it's, of course, way below the standards of Germany. We complain about the standard of our university, but once you've been there, you stop complaining. But having said that, the teaching is excellent, which, of course, is what really counts. It's a strategic management program. I think there are 5 countries involved. Poland, obviously, Finland, Hungary, Germany. Of course, there are Erasmus students who are there very often as well. So we had Spanish, Greek, Finnish, Polish, Brazilian, there were a couple of Swiss. We've had people from all over the place there, about 60 to 80 students working together one whole week on one project. They have to save a Polish brewery from bankruptcy, or a cotton factory or a honey producing plant from going bankrupt. And that's their task for that week.
Is it like a national competition? Do the Germans compete against the others, or do you make a mixed group, or how does that work?
That's an interesting question. It has to be mixed because the whole point of the thing is to work interculturally in teams. The whole week usually starts off with intercultural training. The Finnish university always does this. It's a kind of a test about stereotypes and what do you expect, how do you think it's going to be to work with these people and so on. And at the end of the week, you can then reflect on how it was. And it's really interesting to see if the stereotypes are really stereotypes or if they're true or not. I find it fascinating to observe.
On the one hand, you have these academic classes in intercultural communication, and on the other hand, you have a situation with so many students from so many different countries. Is there a link between the two?
First and foremost, this whole week is not only about intercultural competence. It is sort of understood that you will be interculturally competent when you do it. The whole week is a strategic management program, so it is more or less accepted. Obviously, there are situations where students don't get on. Germans tend to be very competitive, very ambitious. Finns tend to like staying out late at night and opening bottles of vodka in the middle of the night. Amazing staying power regarding drinking and partying. Everybody likes to party. Of course, there are wonderful evening sessions. We did a lot of karaoke this year, which was great fun. Mm-hmm. Intercultural karaoke, also very interesting.
Do you notice different behavior in the different nationalities, that maybe some countries like to take risks and other countries try to avoid this ambiguity?
It's rather difficult to say because I think that the students who we have there are risk takers anyway. Otherwise, they wouldn't venture into a place like Poznan, which is not a world famous city. It is an adventure going there, but it's completely above everyone's expectations, at least from Germany. When you think of going to Poland, you think it's going to be run down, it's going to be smelly and cheap and not very nice. It's absolutely the opposite. It's a beautiful city. I sound like the tourist agency, I know, but I myself was completely amazed by how beautiful it is in places and how nice it is there just to spend a day or evening in one of the many cafes. And it's really very, very cultural, very nice place. I know that my students I took, that was the thing that struck them most, how they had this image of Poland and it was completely different. What they saw was completely different, or what they felt. And I think that alone was really worth it. To sum it up, they learnt a lot of theory. There were a lot of very good lectures. There were lectures from professors from Hungary, Finland, Poland and Germany. very, very high quality standard of teaching, as I said. And they learnt a lot about strategic management. But I think for a lot of them, what was the most important part was to spend a week speaking English with people who were not native speakers. There was no other language. You had to speak English. So that was the great experience for most of them, I think.
This really sounds like a great experience for everybody, students and teachers alike. And I wish we had enough money and energy in our universities to make every student participate in such a practical and intercultural program, as it offers the opportunity to put into practice what students have learned in their regular classes. Of course, the fact that the students work in interculturally mixed groups is a huge plus and a great advantage after their studies when they end up working in an international company. In our last category, absolutely mobile, we listen to Nora Müller, one of my students who is going to the Netherlands for her practical training, and to Dr. Cruikshank from Scotland, and to Clementina Poposka from Macedonia, who came to Germany as lecturers under the Teaching Staff Mobility Program. Let us listen to what these three expect to take home from their academic mobility. First, I asked Nora whether going to a neighboring country in Europe, such as the Netherlands, is still a big step.
I think it's still a huge step because they have a different lifestyle and they have a different culture, so it's still a huge step.
Is there any way you can prepare yourself for this?
I started already the research in the internet and I started to check things about Swissport and about Amsterdam, and I wanted to start to learn a little bit Dutch.
It's going to be difficult to practice it, I think, because Dutch people speak very good German and English.
That's true.
So was your job interview in German or in English?
It was completely in English.
Nora certainly seems to be well prepared linguistically and interculturally for her internship abroad, and we wish her all the best for her stay in the Netherlands. At our international fair, I asked our guest, Dr. Douglas Cruikshank, from our partner university in Aberdeen, Scotland, what he expects to get out of his teaching staff mobility at our university. Douglas must be an expert in marketing, because he managed to squeeze in an advertisement for his own university within the first 20 seconds.
Hi, I'm Doug Cruikshank from the Aberdeen Business School within the Robert Gordon University in Aberdeen, in northeast of Scotland, a very nice part of the world.
Okay, so that was the commercial break. What do you teach and what brings you over here to Koblenz in Germany?
Well, my speciality area would be e-business, e-commerce, but I also generally teach in management and strategy areas.
You're over here on a teaching assignment, are you not? And is this to create some kind of student exchange, or will the teachers be exchanged, or what is the idea of this?
Well, we're over here taking part in your international week, but we're looking for opportunities for both staff and student exchanges. In fact, one of my colleagues was discussing with one of the Koblenz people just a few minutes ago about a planned exchange in the future. So we're looking at it from both the staff and the students' point of view. We're keen for our students to experience international cultures and so on, because particularly coming from northeast of Scotland, we have quite a high proportion of local students. But we also have a high proportion of international students as well, but not so many European students. Most of our international students are from further afield. So we're quite keen to, both from the students' perspective and from our own business school strategic objectives, to internationalise the school as much as possible.
I know that you've only just arrived here, but are there already things where you say, that's something I'm going to take back in my luggage on my way back to my university, which I wouldn't have if I hadn't been out there to Germany?
Well, just arrived, but obviously I'm here on an international visit, but I think I've heightened my realisation of the opportunities and, you know, the interest in this kind of thing. I can see that from your speech we just had from your Lord Mayor. He's very keen on internationalisation, so I can see it's an important thing, and I'm certainly going to take that back with me.
I like Douglas' approach of connecting teaching staff mobility with preparation for student mobility in order to internationalise his university in the southeast of Scotland. He wants to increase the number of incoming students from Europe and thus create an international academic environment for his local students. Clementina also wants to internationalize her Institute of Economics by sitting in on the lectures at our university and by transferring some skills back to her home university.
Yes, I'm here for 1 week and I will stay 4 weeks more. I'm coming from Macedonia, Skopje is the capital, and I teach at University St. Kyrill and Methodius at Institute of Economics.
And you're over here for a whole month?
Yes.
What are you doing?
Yes, I will be here for a month. In the first 2 weeks, I would like to observe the classes of certain professors in banking and finance, monetary economics also. And then I would like to try new gains, skills from German professors in the classroom. So I will take part in the lecturing to German students.
After a week, is there already something where you think, well, this is something which I'm going to take back to Macedonia because we are doing things differently in Germany?
Yes, sure. First of all, I would like to mention the European credit transfer system, because in Macedonia we are trying to implement as future or prosperity being in part of European Union. And as far as I know, we don't have much experience about this. So actually, I would like coming back home to know on exact subject how to put those points.
We keep our fingers crossed that Nora, Douglas and Clementina all get as much out of their experience abroad as they hope. Now this brings us to the end of our show today. If you want to share your own international experiences, or if you just want to give us feedback about our show, please feel free to visit our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com and leave a comment. We are happy about every response, be it criticism or support for our show, and maybe you have a suggestion as to which intercultural topics Anne and I could bring up in one of our next shows. Now, please don't be shy, just tell us. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 19th of September. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell. Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig interkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.